Hey, Dan. Hi, Connor.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
What's up, guys?
Robert May.
The Bears have been stumbling around in the dark all season when it comes to finding what they want to be offensively. Mitchell Trubisky, over the last 6 weeks, has averaged more than 10 yards per attempt using play action. He's clearly very comfortable with it, but it's really difficult to be a play action heavy team when, one, you run out of the shotgun for the majority of your plays, and two, you don't have run plays connected to your play action plays. You don't need to run the ball well or a lot to be a good play action team. The math has told us that for years, but you do need to be a team that wants to have those things be connected, because if you don't have play action plays that look like your runs, teams aren't going to pay attention to it. So that's why teams that tend to run the ball more often are better at play action, even though they don't need to be, because it's part of their identity. And the Bears don't have that because they don't have an identity. It just seems like they're running scattered plays because they don't know what Mitch is good at. Maybe that's starting to come into focus, but I still think that against a team that's not the Lions, he's not going to play nearly as authoritatively as he did last week.
Intelligent, in-depth sports talk for your workday.
What they are is they're out there, they're talking, they're yapping, and they're trying their best.
Bernstein and McKnight, middays on The Score.
Bernstein and McKnight broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios. Visit your local Hyundai dealer in the first ever 8-passenger Hyundai Palisade. Matt Miller will make his regular appearance at 10. The Midday Midway comes your way at 10:40, and then Anthony Herron will help us preview the Bears and the Cowboys tonight. He's going to join us in studio at 11. Surprises along the way as well. 312-644-6767. That's the number at WSCR The Score. Email us at Bernstein and McKnight at 670thescore.com. That's where you listen to us live. We're streaming at 670thescore.com. You want to send a text? Do so. 67011. When you do, we reply. Message and data rates may apply. Twitter is at Bernstein_MCK. He is at C1 McKnight. I am at Dan_Bernstein. Also, download the recently reimagined radio.com app.
How about DePaul?
How about that? It was
how
a fun game.
How about DePaul?
Fun game.
Yeah, a couple opportunities for Tech late in that ball game. You knock a few away, you get a steal, and then you steal the ball back. That's kind of a fun ending to that thing.
Has the court always looked like that there? Because I really haven't watched any games on TV.
I do not know.
And it's just a cool-looking court.
Yeah, it's a good look.
Yeah, they did a really nice job of this. It's a very telegenic basketball production.
It's not that weird Oregon court that happens every year where it looks like some sort of strange forest, and it's like they brought rotted wood into the court and to make it. It's not that,
reclaimed,
which is nice.
Wood, vintage, yeah, wood, right? Driftwood or something like that. When you download the radio.com app, you can stream The Score on your mobile devices, interact with the show and the station on Facebook by liking the 670 The Score page. Our producers today are Shane Reardon.
Well, he's in Jay's chair, so that should make you happier.
Why?
Well, because, you know, Jay's chair is a little...
It's harder to see.
It's beefy.
Yeah, it's got a tallow scent to it, doesn't it?
Like a little steamy. I mean, the beard's starting to disintegrate before my eyes.
It's the only chair we have that has a distinct umami-ness
right.
to it.
Right? Although, if you think about it, Shane would like that chair because it's a lot like a cast iron skillet. It's
correct.
Just so you just leave it, and over time, it becomes its own thing.
It's
Shane's
so much
really
flavor
into that.
In this chair.
Self-seasoning, yeah. Reverse sear on Shane. Rick Camp is on the board, and the executioner Ray Diaz is the man in the back doing what he does. All right, so this is it. This is the first of a series of last stands for the
Bears.
Yes. They are at the hot gates. They are
right.
They are the Spartans.
They are. It's
at
very
Thermopylae.
Much. It's very much Thermopylae, and there will be wave after wave of NFL teams coming after you over and over again, and you have to not die.
Right.
That's it. I mean, you have to not die.
Right? Or it's like in pick your video game of choice that always just this sort of one of the games that no matter what will just end in your death when you're finally overrun. Mm. And it could be asteroids.
Yeah.
Where you
centipede, that's always kind of a tough one.
Yeah, even like Space Invaders with a boom 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 boom. And that's what it is. And eventually it's over and you slink away onto the next thing.
But, that was a good run.
Right?
At least I gave it a good shot.
So I looked it over. I went to your site at 5:38. And
yes.
And I did what you did.
Yes.
And I tried to.
Welcome to the dark side.
I tried to get myself in the mood because you can. There's a button that says run more simulations. So if 29,000 simulations of all the remainder of the season isn't enough, you can keep clicking it. So you can get to like 175,000 simulated seasons.
No, these aren't the facts I want.
Exactly.
Let me just hit the button again.
But it doesn't really change them because all it does is increases the sample size and makes everything more clear. But it was really fun to do.
Of course it is. It's fantastic. You get to click the little button that goes to win, to loss, to tie, and then you blank it out again. You can do the whole thing. I was especially pleased when I was messing around the permutations of it. And I was looking at, you know, what has to happen adjacent to the Bears, not just winning this game against Dallas tonight, but also what has to happen with the Vikings and with the Cowboys and with the Rams and with the with Green Bay Packers. And I was fascinated to find that even, you know, if you have the right set of circumstances go down, you can give the Packers their win over Washington,
okay,
which is going to happen. And you can still be a playoff team if things go real poorly for the Rams as you play it out.
Here's the truth of it. Right now, the Bears are at 3% possibility.
Just let the record show. I have been yelled at for doing this for the last week and a half.
I decided for it for a
day. And now Dan has taken the baton from my cold dead hands.
I wanted to see how it felt. I wanted to see how it felt to just so because it's the clicking.
It's the clicking.
It's the literal clicking that does it. Like, run more simulations. So
put my team in the playoffs, damn it.
So the win at Detroit lifted their playoff chances. When you think about the percentage, from 2% all the way to 3%. So that was half again.
Nearly doubled.
Right.
Doubled.
It was half again as much. So they're at 3. And I know you've been through this.
Yeah, many times.
If they beat the Cowboys tonight. Mm-hmm. They do go up another 2%.
You're damn right they do.
To 5.
Okay? Nearly doubled again.
Now, if you win at Green Bay, then it does double. That's 11%. Okay? But hold on. Okay? Wait till I get going. Those Bears would be 8-6 at that point.
Uh-huh.
And guess who would be back? Akeem Hicks.
Oh, you get Akeem Hicks back.
Okay, so that could be presumably for the Green Bay game, right? But for certain, he'd be back at this point. So all of a sudden, what did Khalil Mack call him? Mufasa?
Yes.
Which is great.
It's just
the fact that he called him Mufasa is just sensational. So then, who knows what the Chiefs are playing for at that point?
I would imagine they're benching Patrick Mahomes. Why would you get him hurt after you've already locked up a playoff spot yourselves?
Mm-hmm. So let's give him that win over the Chiefs.
Let's just waltz on by that and give them a win over the Chiefs.
And one click was over 24,000 simulated seasons that had the Bears in the playoffs 24% of the time.
That is what you call a puncher's chance.
Okay. So then the Bears come home against Minnesota. And if you're 10-6 in 39,424 simulations that I did, they would have a 65% chance of making the playoffs and a 21% chance of hosting one of the wild card games.
So that's not happening, and the Bears probably aren't making the playoffs. But if they're going to, you have to start by beating Dallas tonight. And I actually, for all of the reasons outside of the theoretical playoff numbers that you've just so wonderfully put for us.
These are theoretical.
They are
actual playoff.
I suppose these are actual.
They're actual possibilities and probabilities.
No, I'm going to decry them as theoretical. I challenge your math.
It's not mine.
There are actual, that's a conversation we had too.
Yep.
There are actual things this offense can do to make me just a little happier about things that don't involve percentage points when it comes to a playoff game. And I think you might be able to get them done against the Cowboys. Maybe. Okay. Maybe. It's out there for you.
All right.
I'll tell you what they are after the update.
So you're telling me there's a chance?
Not really. I mean, kind of. But I mean, you're not an idiot. You know what these numbers are.
You know just, what this
they
is.
Can, you know what's going on here. And also, I don't think they're winning. That's, truth be told, I don't really give them a shot. So many things have to go right for them, and they're just not a team for which things have gone right,
no,
really.
No, they're not. I think in order – two things to this game. The Bears offense has to beat a pretty good Cowboys defense. The Cowboys, in order to win the game, have to beat Jason Garrett. That's kind of what it comes down to for me. Even though – Let's take Matt Nagy's word for it. And I think you and I have seen the same thing from Mitch over the last three games, going back to the Rams game. And as we talk about Mitch in this context, it also means the offense, because Matt Nagy has gone to things that Mitch is more comfortable with. He has changed somewhat the shape of this offense. They've gotten better results because of it. They've gotten better play from Mitch. They've gotten a little better offensive line play. Anthony Miller has stepped. All these things matter. But it in terms of making Mitch comfortable and making the offense work, it has changed a lot over the last 3 weeks. Enough? No, probably not. But he's played fairly well. Still, you've had interceptions. One against the Rams, two against the Giants, one against Detroit, and that Detroit one is not good. And the one against the right, there's one against the Rams, a deep shot that is not good.
Not even close.
So amidst his better games, his growth, he is still turning the ball over. Interceptions are still happening. Bad throws are still occurring. That worries me some. Did you know that if Mitch went over 300 yards passing in his last game against Detroit, if he does it again, it'll be the first time that he has back-to-back 300-yard games since weeks 4, 5, and 6 last season. What were those weeks, you ask? That's the Tampa game. Then the Miami game.
We'll always have the Tampa game.
Then the New England game. In which he also, 6 touchdowns, no interceptions against Tampa. 3 touchdowns, 1 interception against Miami. 2 touchdowns, 2 interceptions against New England. You could kind of see the arrow, I suppose, if you just wanted to go from those numbers, start to dip down a little bit. And Mitch's season really seemed to hit rock bottom against the Rams, even though that ended up being a win mostly for the Bears defense. I get that this is an offense that's despite all of your expectations, starting to tick up in the right direction. I just don't know. It's not enough. It's just very clearly not enough. And while the Cowboys have a fun offense and a really good defense, they don't score enough points. The teams they've beaten are mostly bad football teams. Stop me if that sounds too familiar. The teams they've lost to are the ones that are just even a little bit better than them. And the big reason that they've gotten into trouble offensively is because seemingly Jason Garrett decides to hand the ball off when he should throw and throw the ball when he should hand off. And far too often he finds himself handcuffed to Ezekiel Elliott. That's something this Bears defense can handle. Despite everything you've seen, they're actually pretty good against the run still, even without Akeem Hicks. This matchup tonight is like stubbornness. It's the Cowboys' stubbornness against Matt Nagy's own stubbornness.
Well, that's why I made the point that I did during transition about Kevin Tolliver early on in the game, that if Jason Garrett tries to test him and he is turned away, he doesn't think that that's successful, he doesn't like what he sees, like, oh, well, we tried it, and then coaches kind of forget, and then they fall back, and they're like, oh, yeah, I should try him again because these wide receivers are good enough to set him up, to show him a move, and then show him try some double moves, buy a little bit of time to get more than one move in a pattern, and that's where we can exploit him. But coaches are not patient, and in games, mediocre to bad coaches tend to have bad memories and bad organization.
Yeah, the Tolliver thing is somewhat worrisome to me, and I'm glad you did point it out. Do you know which quarterbacks have the most 20-yard-plus passing attempts over the last 5 weeks?
Attempts.
This is chucking it deep and seeing what happens. So obviously, as I categorize it that way, Jameis Winston right there at the top, most 20-yard attempts over the last 5 weeks. Russell Wilson, Tom Brady, believe it or not, and Dak Prescott. Those are your top
Brady.
Five for chucking it deep, 20-plus yards over the last 5 weeks. That is something the Dallas offense has been willing to do over the last little bit of football. And if, like you're talking about, if they're getting Amari Cooper switched out onto, or moved out rather, onto Kevin Tolliver, if that's the matchup, if Amukamara's not able to go, I think you're right to worry about it.
I also read that as opportunity for strip sack, for game-changing strip sack. You need time to throw the ball that far down the field, unless you're just, chucking up a balloon for a wheel route to somebody, which if you're going to drop back and set up on that back foot and scan the field, there's a good chance that 52 can come over and take the ball from you.
Well, I'm glad you decoded it here, because, David Haw talked about this a couple of weeks ago, and it's a really smart concept. The idea that, we talk about quarterback competition for Mitch next year, and what that really means is someone else to start. When you say strip sack, it's code. That's just Khalil Mack.
Yes.
Because he's not gotten a lot of playmaking help from other guys who are supposed to go after the quarterback. I understand Roquan has had a sack or two. I understand.
And Leonard Floyd was unhealthy.
Kwiatkowski has had a nice play or two and a pass defense here and an interception there, and Leonard Floyd's not been healthy. But really, that is code. 52 has got to go get his guy.
That's Connor McKnight. I'm Dan Bernstein. We come back. Something you need to hear from Robert Mays of The Ringer, who was talking to an NFL executive and got an observation about what's going on with the Bears and Matt Nagy. And I guess in some ways we can interpret it as an ongoing defense of Nagy, a mitigation of some of the criticism that he's endured.
Well, yeah, I think so.
You can read it any way you want. We'll discuss it.
Yeah, Mays was on the show yesterday. Late, if you missed it, it's coming back early today. Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
I think that's a sign of weakness when you just come in and start changing everything. You know, there's, you know, especially when you've seen something that's worked before, it's not broken, don't fix it. But tweaks, adjustments, modifications, adaptations, that's all a part of life.
Coach Ditka in there. It's a part of life. Oh, and by the way, if you missed the 5 to 6 o'clock hour on Sports Radio 670 yesterday, you missed just a treasure trove of audio. Apparently, Chris Tannehill almost literally stumbled on a bunch of old instant replay machines that were sitting around.
It was in a bunch of crates all put away by top men.
Top men. And he found audio that hasn't been aired in 15 years, and there was some audio that had never been aired before. I sat in my car in the parking lot at Jewel on Ashland just laughing my ass off listening to some of the stuff. They played an interview that Terry and I did that I didn't remember doing.
Really?
Not a single memory of the conversation we had with Jim Riggleman.
I'm listening back. I had heard that one, and actually had heard about that from friends when I started working here about the Riggleman thing, because he's just such an awesome person, Jim Riggleman, just a really good guy. But I'm halfway through it on the radio.com app, and I, you know, hit the rewind button like 6 or 7 times to go listen to it over and over
again. Go to 670thescore.com or use the app to listen to it. It's great.
It was really cool for me, you know, because I started listening to The Score in high school, obviously, like, you know, just like Parkins did. And it was really cool for me, not to, I don't mean to do that, but you've done this for 20 years. And I've heard stories about Brian Cox after games. And I've heard stories about, you know, talking to Riggleman and stuff like that. Not that particular conversation, because I forgot. But it was really cool for a guy like me who grew up listening to the station to actually hear the voices behind the stories, if that makes sense. And radio is such a cool medium in order, you know, for that to happen.
But the Ditka stuff, too, and remembering how important Ditka, how significant Ditka was, the gravity of everything Ditka, and then Murph talking to Walter Payton.
I haven't heard the Murph stuff yet. God, I got like 20 minutes in, and there's another 20 minutes for me to listen to. I can't wait. But I haven't heard the Murph stuff yet. I cannot. Oh, so is this why on the text screen, 670-11, on the text screen, we have had 4 different people text in begging you to do a Jerry Krause impersonation.
Well, one of the pieces that Tannehill found was the long form comedy bit of Jerry Krause ordering at a delicatessen. So it's okay. That I remember because I scripted it.
Oh, all right. You actually did some script work.
Yes, I wrote.
Was that from a B&B show, or was that before you were doing B&B?
I think it was at the very beginning of, you know, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
Okay.
I can't tell you.
I bet someone texting will remember. That was the other cool part, listening to the first cut. The texters reminding McNeil where stuff came from and how exactly, like, and the Ditka cut from the very beginning. Like, no, that was from the Saints, and it was from this. And
it wasn't just that.
Just the memories that triggers in McNeil and Danny Mac is great.
When they played the Mike North question to Pat Riley of, would you shave your head to guarantee a championship kind of thing. And that, what I don't really think that was the question that won. The question that won that Mike North didn't ask that would have been even better.
Go on.
The question was going to be to Pat Riley, hey, Pat, why is it if every time Fred Flintstone orders the brontosaurus ribs, they tip over his car? Why does he always order it if he knows his car is going to tip over? Now that the
and
level
North just couldn't go through.
No,
with it.
He didn't. The level of absurdity would have been great. But of course, see, but the aftershot of the Mike North question was they revoked my credential.
No,
so I had to go to the Heat head of PR and explain.
No way.
Yeah, because it said like anything WSCR because of this.
He identified himself. He actually Riley asked him who he works for, and North said 670 The Score Chicago.
So I had to plead my case and say, look, I had nothing to do with this. Our show's into I'm a reporter. I'm not affiliated with that show. I had nothing to do with planning that or anything to do with it. Didn't even know what was going on. Didn't know he was really going to do it. So eventually they restored my access. But it was bad.
No way.
Like and I think Ron Gleason, you know, called on my behalf and tried to explain what was going on.
That makes sense. You got to have the beat guy there. I mean, otherwise you lose the whole thing. A couple of texters have texted and see if this jogs your memory, saying that the scripted Jerry Krause thing you did was from very early B&B. Because this guy has a memory of it happening in the daytime or having listened to it in the daytime. So maybe like 8 or 9 in the morning, something like that. Is that jog memory at all?
Yeah, we were on 8 to noon. When we started.
Okay.
So, yeah, probably 1999, something like that.
All right. Yeah. Makes sense to me. I can't wait to get to that part. There's a whole lot more. I guess Tanny's got a lot more in the vault. The open itself for the vault bit is, you know, typical Tannehill. Yep. It's genius.
Now, Robert Mays was with us yesterday, and he talks to a lot of people around the league, and he just offered a very interesting nugget about what has happened or what is not happening with the Bears offense.
I understand that I'm talking myself into this when I say it, and I've said it pretty much all season. I just think that with how poor the quarterback has played and how limited the quarterback is in terms of his mental processing, what you can put on his plate, I think it has short-circuited what the offense can be. And again, I'm sure that's a rationalization. I'm trying to talk myself into the best version of what's still possible. But I do think I'd like to see whatever he can do offensively with a different, more competent quarterback. To just have more stuff on the menu. And maybe he's not the guy. Maybe he doesn't have the juice, and maybe it goes horribly wrong when they do bring someone else in. But I at least want to see it, because I do think that it just completely sabotages what you can be as a play caller when you have no faith in the guy running the offense. I was told that they took about a third of the amount of plays, that about two-thirds of the amount of plays he would have in Kansas City are off the table now because of what Trubisky can do. That is what someone told me recently. It's like 50 to 150 in terms of the normal play call sheet. That's absurd. And I just think that really limits what you can be as a play caller. So if that's the case, I just want to see someone who puts more on the table for him to create that cogent plan.
I'm with you on that. And I think the Bears probably owe it to themselves to see out the Matt Nagy hire, right? Whether that's with Mitchell Trubisky or not. But there are still other decisions that got made where you look at Matt Nagy and go, man, not a lot of coaches do that. Whether it's kicking from this hash mark or that one, whether it's substituting improperly, whether it's after a timeout, not having a play call ready to roll. And that kind of stuff is really difficult for me to separate from panic or an identity crisis because of a quarterback for whom you had to subtract two-thirds of the play off the sheet.
I agree with you. That's the stuff that to me is most distressing. But I also think when you're the head coach and the play caller and your play calling brain is kind of broken because of what you're dealing with, it can affect your decision-making brain. And again, I understand that's rationalization. I'm talking myself into this. But at this point, you kind of have to. He's going to be the coach next year. So I might as well look at this and say, what can the best possible outcome of this be? And that's – maybe it's not. Maybe when he gets another quarterback, the same stuff still happens, and it's time to move on.
Yeah, it's not a controlled experiment at this point.
Yes.
No.
And that's the thing. It just – we only have it with these circumstances, and I just want to see it in different circumstances before I make the ultimate judgment. Matt Nagy did not pick Mitchell Trubisky. That is not something he wanted. He did not want to build his offense around this person. So if he can have some hand in the next quarterback they choose, then there are no more excuses. There's no more explaining this away, because this is what he would have wanted to some degree. Even if it's not the guy he gets to hand pick, if he has some input on where things go from here, then it is laid at his feet in a way that I don't think it is right now.
And while that sounds like a full-throated defense of Matt Nagy, it's hard to argue with the logic that this isn't the best way for Nagy to show you what he thinks he can be as a play caller, or as you point out, because of all the everything that's going on,
yeah,
as a head coach, as a manager of a sideline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think what I liked most about that part of our discussion with Robert Mays of The Ringer yesterday is that he freely admits that this is something he's talking himself into.
Mm-hmm. And that's okay. He's allowed to.
Of course he is. He's allowed to do that because he's talked to people around the league. He's fairly plugged in. He kind of gets the vibe here. But also because of the, I don't want to be too harsh, I guess, but because of the vast emptiness of Mitch Trubisky's production that's been evident over these first 14 weeks of the season. Because there's nothing there, you're left to substitute in what you think may be possible with a head coach that had the blessing of Andy Reid, that has, you know what, a good resume coming into this Bears job and then won coach of the year. All kinds of caveats apply on that. He had a great defense, and was he actually calling? But all that stuff matters, of course. But they're not firing him. He will absolutely 100% coach next season. So what's left? Change the offense. Don't be limited to 50 plays.
Right, giving him every best opportunity to say, hey, look, I haven't been able to be who I can be because I've had these limitations, and I'm down to 50 plays.
And I think, too, you know, maybe it takes an offseason, and Matt Nagy has talked about changing things on the fly and that shows weakness and stuff. But, hell, then during an offseason, then you have to be able to change who you are and what you're capable of.
Let me also say this. This goes for football, basketball, maybe hockey. I don't know enough about hockey to tell you, but I know it goes for
Stop talking hockey.
It goes for football and basketball. Every coach I've ever been around comes in with a thick book of plays he thinks are going to work and always pares it down based on certain inadequacies of his team. Always.
That's called good coaching.
And I remember having a conversation when I was working with Dave Corzine with the Chicago Rockers. I was doing games for them. I was working for Mitch. And Dave Corzine was coaching the Rockers. And I noticed that they were running pretty much three sets. They had one side out-of-bounds play. They had one baseline out-of-bounds play. It's called your bob. And they had three sets. So, and I literally had seen the playbook. So before one of the games, I was before we did our little recorded thing, I said to Dave, I said, we're down to like three plays, aren't we? Because I remember all the stuff you were showing me in the practice before. And, you know, keep running this and this and this. And he's like, did you coach? And I said, no, but I've been around a few, even at my young age. And he said, yeah, this is what we do now. And it worked. They ran things that were, but what they did was they retrofit it and then rethought it and built outward from there. They could pare it down and say, okay, now that we know we can do this, let's do this off of this and this off of this. And then you saw it reconstructed organically based on what they figured they could do. And that's the second part of it is what we really haven't seen with the Bears.
No, you build off of what works. And because guys like Robert Mays or Sage Rosenfels every day, every game tells us they're just not building off of what works. That is what has me still scratching my head about how good Matt Nagy can really be.
The White Sox ran into some bad luck yesterday and maybe a little more than that. And boy, did they want to tell you that they did. So we're going to get to that regarding the decision that Zach Wheeler made. That's coming up next on The Score.